Hi guys, just a quick update as sadly this is going to be the last episode for a while and I am absolutely gutted to be saying that. Because of the ongoing pandemic, the new restrictions and me and most of my No Ordinary Gals all living in the Essex and London area, I can no longer do recordings in person. I mentioned on Instagram the other week that I really didn't want to switch to virtual recordings. Whilst there's nothing wrong with them and some of my favourite podcasts are always recorded virtually, this show is just really personal and I don't think that you would get the openness and the honesty and the raw emotion unless it was recorded in person. So rather than produce something that isn't as organic and as real as it could be, I've made the really rubbish decision to pause recording for now. But I will be keeping my Instagram up to date with lots of content and stories and whatnot. So if you don't already, please head over there, search No Ordinary Gal and give me a follow. I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has and is still tuning in. I still can't believe it's gone as well as it has. So please, let's stay connected through Insta. And I very much hope that you'll all come back and join me when I can be on the airwaves with you again. So this isn't a goodbye. It's just a see you soon. Hello and welcome to the No Ordinary Gal podcast. I am your host, Laura. This is the show where we will be celebrating the normal, the average, the everyday girl. And I'll be sharing stories from ladies who may seem to fit that bill, but to me, they're really rather extraordinary. So come along with us and discover how you too are No Ordinary Gal. Today's No Ordinary Business is Wholesaler, an awesome clothing brand with original designs from the talented female duo Jay and Lisa who run it. They have the coolest t-shirts, jumpers, bags, beanies and original artwork. And if you're based up north, then you can go and visit these ladies in person. They've got the Wholesaler shop within Spark York, and whilst you're there you can even grab yourself a permanent piece of their work as they also run a tattoo studio. But if you can't get up there, you can still buy online. So head on over to wholesaler.co.uk to check out their full range and follow them on Instagram as well for sneak peeks of new designs and to see what awesome ink work they've been doing. Have a look and see if you can spot my legs on their grid. You'll find links to both their website and Instagram page in the show notes for this episode. Now, let's meet today's No Ordinary Gal. Today's guest is Kim Jarvis, one of my oldest friends since school. Obviously, I think all of the wonderful gals in my gang are extraordinary, but it's the events of the past 2 years that I want to talk about with her today. Despite being a childcare worker for the first part of her career, Kim was adamant she never wanted to be a mum, a sentiment she shared with her fiancé Danny, and they were happily set in a life built just for two. Then the unexpected happened, and they fell pregnant. And they now have a gorgeous 18-month-old little girl called Aurora. And it's been so interesting to see the one who was always so amazing with everyone else's kids, but didn't want her own, now adapt to what it is like to being a mum. Kim has also unfortunately been a victim of the pandemic with it claiming her job. After months of furlough, September saw her served redundancy, something that has had a huge impact on her and her mental well-being. She has had to adapt a lot this past 2 years. And it's how she's rolled with the punches that make her so extraordinary. Kim, welcome to the show.
Oh my God. What? I am so nervous about this.
Are you?
I am more nervous about this than the interviews that I've just had to get a job.
Really?
Laura, I never, ever, ever talk about my feelings.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's really important that
I do think it's good. And also, you've also given me half a glass of red wine. I'm absolutely knackered because Aurora decided that she didn't want to nap today. Thanks, Aurora. So, yeah. But I don't know how this is going to go down.
Listen, the wine is going to make it go down absolutely perfectly.
I'm sure it will.
It'll ease your nerves. You'll get into the flow of it. Like everyone, all the other girls have said, mate, it's like a little therapy session. Yeah. It's kind of what we need. Because
I was literally talking to myself on the way in and I was like, I'm going to cry at least like one point. It's just going to... Laura's going to have to edit so much. I'm going to be crying the whole time.
And that's the reason why I don't edit, because it has to be very real, very natural, because that's what everyone else is going through and that's what people relate to. So before I do descend you into a blubbering mess...
I'm only going to apologise as well.
Let's get the formality out of the way. Do you think you are an ordinary or an extraordinary gal?
Completely ordinary. Although, what has happened is just mental. But I do think that I'm not the only girl or only person that experiences it.
Yeah.
I'm just one of the unlucky ones that I've had to.
Yeah.
Not Aurora, obviously. She's amazing. Yeah. Let's just put that out there. Yeah, no. Not Aurora.
Don't worry. We'll make sure that's all covered off.
Edit that bit, yeah.
And again, this is such a common theme amongst everybody, is that they kind of acknowledge that some of the things they've done are a bit extraordinary or are a bit mental, whatever. But are just like, but everyone else goes through it. I'm not the only one. I'm nothing special. It's just I happen to be someone that this has happened to.
Yeah. I think the mental health part is, like, obviously when we talk about it, like, but the mental health part, you think, oh, yeah, like, this only really happened. Like, this is only me and whatever. But it's happening and it's getting spoken about so much.
Yeah.
That you realise that you're not.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel a little bit better, to be fair.
Oh, 100%. Like, I said to Charlotte last week when we was recording on World Mental Health Day, I said, as far as I'm concerned, the taboo has been broken. Like, enough people are talking about it now. Like,
enough people are talking about it, but not enough's being done about it.
That's exactly it. It's and not the action.
People are still getting discriminated against.
Yeah, 100%. Because of it. Yeah.
And it's disgusting, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's just... definitely not taken seriously enough, I think, by some people. Gosh, and yeah, like you say, it's discrimination. Like, the services just aren't in place for what there is versus physical health.
Yeah.
And, you know, you break your leg, you can go and get it dealt with. Exactly, you have a mental breakdown, you're put on a waiting list for God knows how long, and then you get 10 weeks of therapy from the NHS, and, you know, very, very difficult. But
anyway,
let's draw back to the beginning of all of that.
Yeah.
The one who was a nursery assistant.
Nursery nurse.
The one who was a nanny.
Yeah.
The one who was always taking her nephews.
Yeah.
When I had Robin, super hands-on, would be the one rocking him to sleep when I just could not finish the day.
I think at one point I was known as the get the kid to sleep.
Oh, you was, 100%. Give the baby to Kim.
I think we was at Lizzie's wedding. And like the night before, Lizzie came to me and was like, can you just put Penelope to sleep, please?
Yeah, absolutely. You've just you are such a natural with kids and with babies, like all age ranges. It's not just like, you know, you're the baby whisperer. You're great with toddlers. You're great with kids. Obviously, you've got your nephews. But you never wanted to have one of your own.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked my life. But I still like my life.
Yeah.
Let's just put that out there. Oh, God. This is not going well, is it? No, but, like, I enjoyed going on nice holidays, having, a good job and not having the worry of child back home. And I just never really... It's hard. I just never really thought, well, I'm going to have a child.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to have. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to get married, or I'm going to have a child and then get married, or whatever people do these days.
Yeah.
I never see myself having a baby.
Yeah.
I always see myself getting married, but never a children. And Dan was the same. Well.
Yeah.
He says that, but you have no idea.
No, true. And I think for us, it was always so bizarre because... Like I say, not only did you go into the industry of childcare, but you're one of four. So you grew up in a really busy household.
Oh, and I used to get it all the time.
Dan's one of four, and he grew up in a bit. And I kind of thought, maybe they think that was just too hectic. And actually, they don't want that, you know. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, I used to love going to the Jarvis's because of that buzz. Yeah, you know, there was...
The buzz is great. Now I've had a child, I think... Like, about having, like, a big old family and, like, the buzz of it.
Yeah.
Not having normal children. Let's put that out there. But, but that buzz that you get being around a big family is brilliant. Like, it's still great now.
Yeah.
Like, even when we're 30, if I'm even 30, but, like, going back home and being with family and going to Dan's family's they're just as big as ours, so yeah, it's like, yeah. It's great, it's so nice. But yeah, no, I never wanted kids, and then something happened.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you turned up at one of the kids' birthday parties, and I just instantly knew something was wrong with you. You could just tell you was like a bit like erratic.
Yeah, I felt well erratic as well.
Yeah, and you just sort of.
I think I was so nervous because I was like, "Do I tell them? Do I not tell them?" I was like, "Four." I think I was like 4 weeks. I just like literally so early.
Yeah.
And then I just remember sitting there thinking, "I've got to. I can't. I've got to tell them."
Yeah.
I think I told Nick first.
Yeah.
Because me and Nick always had a bet that every child I had, I'd have to give her 20 quid.
Yeah.
I still owe her 20
quid. I was going to say, if you paid her, like, Nick, edit this that, is the reminder.
No, I still owe her 20 quid, to be fair. But, no, you know, I just walked up to her and I was like, oh, I owe you 20 quid. She was like, she knew straight away.
Did she?
Yeah.
Was she not even like, oh,
she looked at me and then it was a bit like, then she just sort of, like, she knew.
Yeah.
And then I was like, God, that didn't take long. Like, you must have like had that right at the front of your mind. Yeah. I want that 20 quid. Yeah. But yeah, no, and then so it was, yeah, it was mental actually. I didn't expect, we wasn't expecting like to have a baby. Like she wasn't planned, as you'd say. She's an amazing surprise and she's the best thing that's ever happened to us.
Mm.
But yeah, I was sitting at work and I was thinking, oh man, actually started, I was in the gym and Carly came to David Lloyd with us. And it was my mum and dad as well. I think it was like Father's Day or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, I remember thinking, oh, I'm like a day late on my period.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like a day's nothing, is it?
Yeah.
And I said to Carly, oh, I'm a day late on my period. Anyway, like, and then another day went, and then another day went, and I was like, I'm 4 days late now. Like, and I was, do you know what? I still didn't think I was pregnant. I'm so stupid. Oh, literally, I was sitting at my desk, and I couldn't, like, because no one ever tells you what it's like to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And that sounds really stupid, but, like, no one says it, like, what, like, the symptoms of, I know, like you get sickness.
Yeah.
And
no whatever. One talks about the tiredness.
Yeah.
No one talks about.
And no one ever tells you. It's that it feels like you're gonna come on.
Yes.
No one ever tells you that.
Yeah.
So then I'm sitting there. Like, this is why for 4 days I was like, yeah, I'm gonna come on because I can feel it. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And then every day went past and I'm like, it's not happening. So I googled it. I'm not joking. I'm not shitting you. I googled it and I was like. And then it was one of the symptoms of pregnancy was like this cramping feeling, and I was like, I went on my lunch break to Superdrug and I found the cheapest pregnancy test I could find.
Yeah.
Not one of these fancy clear blue ones that tell you how many weeks you are and all of that. And I was like, I'm just going to do it just so that it's at the back of my head and it's done with. And I went down and I sat in the toilet at work. And I took this test, still thinking that was going to come back negative. Yeah. I sat on the Daily Mail app for 5 minutes
on the toilet. Waiting for it to process.
It was that cheap. It took 5 minutes, right? And I was just scrolling through, and I was like, "Oh, it's been 5 minutes. I'll have a look." And then, it was pregnant. And I just remember looking at myself, talking to myself in the mirror, going, "You're pregnant." I'm like, "Nah." But like, you are. And then I had to go back to my desk and work for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, bad timing.
That was real bad timing. But it was like 3 hours I had to.
Yeah.
And then like I got home and Dan, I think I had to pick Dan up from the station or something like that. And I picked him up from the station and I didn't tell him straight away.
Mm.
And he was rambling on about something at work. I can't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
I didn't even listen.
Yeah,
I kept thinking in my head was, you're going to lose your shit. Yeah.
Your world's about to turn upside down, lad.
You thought you had a bad day.
Yeah. Wait till you get home.
You just wait, kid. And then I was literally, and then all I remember was getting through the door and I'm sitting on the sofa with a tea towel, right? I'm talking about a tea towel. And he was still running around.
Typical Dan.
Yeah, typical Dan. Yeah, doesn't show up. And then, so I'm sitting there thinking, just shut up, or just pause, so I can just say, hang on, wait a sec.
Yeah.
Because he was rambling that much, and then I'm thinking, just please, shut up, please. And all of a sudden, I got my moment.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got something to say. I'm pregnant. And it was weird, because we'd never wanted children, I never knew how he was going to react.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether he was going to freak and think, oh my god, da, 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 da. I don't want children, da, da, and go that way, yeah. Or he was going to be fine and dandy. And literally the first thing he did was smile.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, I'm all right now.
We're okay.
Yeah, we're good. Okay. We're all right, because I was never going to go down that avenue.
Yeah.
And it was just, right, we're on the same path now, and
yeah,
we can look forward to it.
Yeah.
But it's funny, because my sister Carly, I don't know where she ran my sister's. I think she was around Kaylee's. And she came in. She had a key to the flat. And I'm sitting there with two pregnancy tests in my hand, showing that in the living room. And she comes running through the front door, and I'm thinking, nope. And then, like, it's got to only be Carly. I threw the pregnancy test across the room, like, into the corner of the flat. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then as she went to the toilet, and I turned around to Dan, and I was like, look, because it was Kaylee's 30th.
Right.
That Friday, we was meant to be going out. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to have to tell them.
Yeah.
Because...
not going to be drinking.
Mate, when do I ever go out?
Absolutely, yeah, you are ham sandwich on every occasion. Yeah, so
I was like, I've got to have to tell her. So I said to Dan, should I just tell her? Because I'm going to tell her anyway, she's here, I might as well just tell her. So she come out, and then I was like, oh, we've got something to tell you. And she was like, you're pregnant. And she just fell to the floor. Yep. She's like, I knew it.
I was going to say, you'd already told her that he was late.
The gym.
So she's probably sat there thinking, I wonder if today will be the day that Kim texts me and tells me that she's pregnant.
So yeah, that was the day. And then it just went like from there, really. But yeah, no, like I hated pregnancy. Hated it. Everybody raves about how magical they feel. I hated it.
Yeah.
There was nothing. The only nice part about pregnancy is that lovely feeling of growing
movement.
A baby.
Yeah.
The movement, and you can feel her moving, and just knowing that you've created such an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I never really worried about the birth, really. I did hypnobirthing, which was incredible. I really, really rate that. I did all the essential oils, the candles and all of that. The birth was, I should have worried about the birth, to be fair. That was extreme.
Yeah.
That was hard work, actually. 2 days.
Yeah.
I was, and it was a hard one.
Yeah.
And I, without going into too much groggy detail, but so she came out 2 days after initially going into labour. And as I'm like ready to get her out, I get this midwife come through the door saying, we've had a sister ring, and just to find out whether you're okay. So my sisters have not heard from me for so long.
And panicked.
And ringing the hospital as much as they could. And I'm like, oh, it's fine. And I think the first thing I did once she'd come out was phone my dad.
Yeah.
Because my dad, I know, was at home.
Yeah.
He locked himself upstairs and he just didn't want to talk to anyone. This is what I've been told. I could be lying. He could have just been sitting on the sofa watching the telly. But and until he knew that we was okay,
he wasn't,
you know what dad's like.
Yeah.
That was pretty pretty fucking crazy, to be fair.
So obviously she's now a little over 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
How has motherhood been for you?
Yeah, I love her, and I love being her mum. It's complete, like, nothing I ever would have ever imagined. I know that sounds like the first 4 weeks, no one ever tells you how shit that is.
Yeah.
I've actually now lost track
of how many mums have said that on this podcast, and I think that's so important that you need to be prepared for that. I was listening
to one of your podcasts. I can't remember what it was now. I think it was Charlotte's, but you were talking about something else. I can't remember now. But about that nobody tells you the truth.
Yeah.
And that certain person that you were talking to was like, I need that.
Yeah.
That's me.
No, well, I think it's fair. I don't think you'll disagree with me when I label you as a control freak.
Oh, massively. Yeah,
and I think that's the thing about having a baby is all of a sudden you're not in control anymore. This little human is in control of everything about you.
And if you're
not prepared for that, and you are by nature a bit of a control freak, it's really hard to let go and roll with that.
Yeah, definitely. I've only just really, I think after maybe only a few months ago, I just learned to just let go.
Yeah, put it in the fuck it bucket.
No, yeah, but like, yeah, it's just more a feel. But I don't know if it's to do with work. But,
yeah.
I just feel completely different.
Yeah.
Like, in the first year of her, the first 4 weeks are just horrendous. Sorry, but they are. For me, like, I loved her and I just was obsessed with her.
Yeah.
And the obsession overtook, to be honest.
Yeah.
She was tiny. She was 4 days late, I think, no, 6 days late, and she was £5.13.
Yeah, she was dinky little dog, wasn't she?
Tiny.
Yeah.
And I've only ever known big babies.
Yeah.
So when she came out and she was so tiny, I was so worried all the time that she wasn't getting enough of what she needed.
Yeah.
And I wanted to breastfeed.
Yeah.
I didn't know enough about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Didn't even know, not even the smallest amount of information.
Yeah.
Didn't even know. So I was adamant that I wanted to breastfeed. But then, at the same time, I just wanted her to get food.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'll do a bit of both, and I'll do a combination.
Yeah.
Just my mental health was terrible.
Yeah.
Because I just thought, like, I want to do this, and I want to do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Like, I could have just bottle fed. I wasn't thinking, oh, I've got to breastfeed and da-da-da-da-da. But it was, like, I didn't know what was right.
Yeah.
And then I think one of the health visitors came around, and I was like, I'm doing this. I'm just explaining to her. I just said, sort of said to her. And she was like, yeah, just breastfeed. And I'm like, I come away afterwards, and Dan sat down on the sofa with me, and he just went, Kim, just bottle.
Yeah.
Just bottle feed her.
Yeah.
Cut all of this out.
Yeah.
Because I was expressing.
Yeah.
I was
breastfeeding.
Yeah. I was bottle feeding.
Yeah.
I was doing everything.
Yeah.
And I just was draining. Drained you.
It's really draining.
And I didn't know what I was doing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think.
But you think you do, in a way, but you've no idea what you're doing.
No, you don't. And I think, again, breastfeeding, it's another one of those things where it's natural and you think, literally, the baby will come out and latch and everything's going to be perfect. No one tells you how hard it is to establish a latch, how long it takes to establish a latch, how the fact that you don't actually get your milk until a couple of days after the baby's born.
Oh my God, so like, it's a funny story there. Yeah. So I was sitting in the front room and I had like my sister and the boys had come round, like my nephews. And I think Dan's parents and grandparents were there as well. So like the world, obviously. And and I just remember sitting, my sister looked at me and she was like, Kim, you got milk. And it was just like pouring out. I was like, do you know what as well though? I knew it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, I know, I was just about to go and get a pat. Like, I'm not one. I lost every ounce of dignity in childbirth.
You do, yeah, you do.
And then after that, if you want to be around here, you're going to have to get used to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're lucky you've got this.
I totally agree. And again, you kind of, you're not given that education. And I remember literally being in hospital and having like a midwife, all right, she's a qualified midwife, but a stranger massaging my boobs to try and get Robin to latch, to try and bring the milk to the front.
And you don't ever sit there and, like, question it, do you?
No, you just let them get on with it.
You don't know, do you?
Yeah, you but, absolutely do, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go to well extremes here. But when they was tidying up that area, she was like, do you want to wipe? I was like, no, you do.
Yeah, you sort it all out.
Mate, I've done my bit, you do yours. Sort me out so I can get out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it is... It is a real, like I say, them ladies joining us again, people. You can, that first 4 weeks, because you're not, I mean, nothing can prepare you for the sleep deprivation.
No.
Nothing can. And even when they're like, sleep when the baby sleeps. And even when that's your first one and you haven't got to worry about a toddler and you're not working and whatever, like, you literally just sit and stare at them instead of sleeping. Or you will
take loads of pictures,
cloak your
that
eye,
you'll never look at again.
Yeah. or your camera roll, that first like few months of having a baby, it's just so many. And when you look back, they're just like little potato heads. It's like they're just like
I just found that like I had like the same photo.
Yeah, you do like,
5 times. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't need that photo 5 times.
No.
Or I've shared the photo.
Yeah.
With other people, like family.
Yeah.
And so I've got, like, because of WhatsApp, I've got, like, another load of that.
Yeah.
And then I just think, I'm trying to save photos to get memory off my phone. And I look at my computer and I've got, like, duplicated, like...
images, yeah.
Oh,
it's tough.
That's hard. That's stressful enough as it is. Because I need more space to take pictures of my child.
I know, yeah, exactly. But it's taken up with all pictures of my child.
Oh, it's hard work.
There's so many little things like that that are so funny. And then when you think, oh, yeah, she's asleep. I think she's going to be, you know, she should be down for a little while now. I'll have a sleep. You lay down and either they wake up or you're suddenly bang awake and you can't sleep.
Yeah.
But I always remember Cameron being like, oh, you just go off to bed. I'll take over now. I'm in from work. And I'll be like... but I'm not tired.
Yeah.
Like, I will not be able to sleep. I'd actually rather just have some conversation with you because you've been out of work all day.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is... I don't think I... Maybe, like, the first few weeks I slept because I think in, like, 4 days when I was giving birth to her, in 4 days I had an hour's sleep.
Yeah.
And, it was just... I don't even know I was alive, to be honest.
Yeah, it's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah, savage. And so I think the first few weeks I started sleeping every now and again when she was napping, but not massive amount.
Yeah.
Because I like a tidy flat.
Yeah.
And that sounds ridiculous, I can't sit. Like, I think the day I came home, I was tidying the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I was putting away all the presents.
Yeah.
And putting the cards up on the, like, I wasn't one of these, like, 5 days after I was walking down the seafront with her.
Yeah.
And, excuse my language here, but my vagina felt like it was going to fall out.
Yeah.
And I still grafted and carried on walking down the seafront.
Yeah.
But, I put myself under so much pressure.
Yeah.
For the first full year
of
getting everything right.
Oh, 100%.
Everything. Whether it's going to, like, Halloween and dressing them up in a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
They had to have a Halloween costume. It's the first Halloween, they've got to have a Halloween costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Why did you think that you needed to put on that?
Yeah.
I think I went to pick pumpkins last year.
Yeah.
4 times?
Yeah.
Four times?
And she was 6 months old.
She had no clue what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, no. And then I sit there and think to myself, yeah, but look, all their memories. She's going to be able to look on the pictures and be like, oh, my mum took me here and my mum took me there.
Yeah.
Or mum and dad, should I say. Yeah. Mum took me. Yeah. In the first year, it is normally just the mum, though, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
But, like, that, I put myself under pressure to do that so that she can look back and say, amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But, not controversially, just you know in... a sensible headspace now that when she's 16 and she's looking back on that, that's not what will define you as being a good mum.
No, she
will sit back and be like, all of the love and emotional support you've given me over however many years I can remember back, that's what makes you a good mum, not the fact that you sat and did an advent calendar with me for every day.
Oh my God, that was extreme, wasn't it?
That was mad. So Kim, don't get me wrong, I was living for it because you know that I am extra AF.
And I was
like, I wish I had the time to do this with my kids.
Yeah. Well, that a part of me then also thought, I'm not going to be able to have this again.
Yes, yeah.
This is the only year, I've had a little bit longer, but this is the only year I'm going to get with her.
Yeah.
And that just kept, the weight of that on my shoulders was just massive.
Yeah.
So I'm only ever going to get this. Well, you're going to get a lot more than this, Kim, but, you know. But every day, I did an activity advent calendar. So every day we did a different activity, and I either took like little snippet videos and put Christmas music and done all of that.
Yeah.
So extreme. So, but she loved it.
Yeah.
I'd loved it. And I think everybody else that got involved loved it too.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, really? At that age?
Yeah.
Like, maybe this year,
She'd probably be more into it this year. Quite enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, like the pressure of...
Yeah.
Knowing that I'm not going to be able to be around every day to do an activity because I'll be at work.
Yeah.
Like weighed heavily on me.
Yeah.
So like I had to get everything right.
Yeah.
And then I think COVID, and like a lot of things happened. Then COVID hit, and then I just thought, fuck this.
Yeah. So let's bring it up to speed then. So you had this incredible year off, highly pressured year off.
Yeah.
But like you say, you absolutely made the most of that time.
Oh God.
With
your
little girl.
We did everything. Yeah.
And the return to work came up, and I think certainly when it's a first time, oh my God, the stress and anxiety that brings when you've just had all that time off spending day in, day out with them is such a weight. Like, it's massive. It feels huge. It breaks your heart just even knowing that it's coming up. I think that's why so many people try and start small businesses through their maternity leave, because just, can I do something that means I don't have to go back to work? Yeah. Obviously, you were no exception to that.
No. I think just thinking about it now makes me feel sick.
Yeah.
Because it was that bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to get upset.
It's all right.
Edit this.
Told you. Editing nothing.
Right, come on. I'm just going to have another...
Have a glug of wine. And this is what I mean. Even this, your return to work was 6-7 months ago now.
Yeah.
Was it like February? You had a year off. She was born in February.
Yeah, so I went back to work. We've been to Copenhagen for my 30th, and I came back, and I think I've got back from Copenhagen. So, bearing in mind, I'm going back to work after a year off anyway.
Yeah.
I get back from Copenhagen, and the day after, I go back to work.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a rough time for me. It was probably the worst, it was the worst time of my life, I would say. Like, apart from, obviously, loved ones dying and stuff
of course.
But personally, it affected me for the length of time.
Yeah.
It massively fucked me over.
Mm.
I think... I felt okay going back to work because I felt like I was getting a bit of me back.
Yeah.
Which I think all mums really want.
Yeah.
But my return to work was shocking.
Mm.
Like, it was, I can't go into detail, but it was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And then, like, a lot of things happened at work. I had the guy who was covering me was buying drugs off a drug dealer and contacting them through my work phone.
Oh, excellent.
Top geezer.
Yeah.
And so I came back, and then like within the first week, I had a really terrible week at work, like terrible. And then the Friday coming home on the train, I got a text message from this drug dealer offering me all these drugs. And then that was it.
Yeah.
That completely threw me.
Yeah.
And then when I was going back to work, I just felt like I was living in a bubble.
Mm.
Like, and I was so, like, I can only say, like, describe it as fog.
Yeah.
I thought there was something wrong with me.
Mm.
I did what everybody else does and what you shouldn't do, and Google fogginess and all of this, and I'm thinking, right, I've got a brain tumour.
Mm.
Like, I'm not cheating you. I was literally, I'm terrible at worst case scenario.
Yeah, you are.
I am the worst at it.
Yeah.
When something bad happens,
yeah,
or like something's happening, I think of the worst case because I know that anything better than that will be better.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking, right, I've got a brain tumour, I've got this, I've got this. My daughter's turning one. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
This is mad, isn't
it?
Yeah. I laugh at it now, but it is nasty. My daughter's going to die. I'm going to... All of this is all happening.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Basically. And then on that day where I was Googling in the toilet, brain fog, I went over because it was Aurora's, coming up to Aurora's first birthday. I had no idea what I was getting her because I couldn't even think straight. I walked into early learning centre to look at some toys.
Mm.
And I remember looking at the toys, but not taking in what I was looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just looking, I was like, oh, there's wooden toys, because wooden toys are better than plastic toys. Mm. But why are wooden toys better than plastic toys?
Yeah.
But in my head,
yeah, yeah,
wooden toys are better than plastic toys.
Yeah, yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's, and I'm looking, I'm scared, I can't even tell you now what I was looking at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then as I'm looking at it, the guy who was covering my position walked through the door and started to have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at him thinking, I just, go away.
Yeah, I need to get away.
And then that was it. I had a panic attack in the middle of Westfield Shopping Centre.
Mm.
I had, I phoned Carly, my sister, and I just said, I think I'm going to have a panic attack. Because I've never had a panic attack.
Yeah.
Never. This, nothing like this has ever happened to me. So it was all new and I didn't have a clue what was going on. So I was like, oh, I think I'm having a panic attack, Carly. So I went down like one of the side alleys of the shopping centres.
Yeah.
Thinking, you know, I'm so hot. Like.
Yeah.
And she was like, right, breathe, like doing all the breathing. Blah, 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 blah. And then I went back to work and I said, look, like, I think I've just had a panic attack.
Yeah.
And my boss was brilliant, like, he's absolutely amazing and spot on. He just said, look, go home, da-da-da-da. And then that was it. For like, I think for like 3 days, I was just a mess.
Mm.
A mess. My mum and my sister came round and basically sat with me for like days.
Yeah.
Just to be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think always I'm going to get emotional to say this because, and it's fine that I'm going to get emotional to say this, but at one point I just remember thinking, I can't. Oh, sorry.
It's alright. It's alright.
I felt like I couldn't even look after Aurora.
Mm.
I knew I could.
Yeah.
Wait. edit. I knew I could, and then there was nothing wrong.
Yeah.
But mental health is just Jesus. Like, sorry. This is like a therapy session.
I told you.
I knew I was going to cry.
But you'll leave feeling so much better.
I know. Yeah. Especially when I take that risk of that bottle of wine. Jesus. Anyway, look, I'm good now. But look, it was horrendous. Mm. It was bad. I sat around my sisters, Kaylee. I've got such an amazing family.
Like, oh yeah, you have. God. Jarvis's rule.
They do. They're epic.
Yeah.
I sat around my sisters solidly. I think every day I went round there.
Yeah.
Thank God she doesn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I remember sitting around there, and that was me being able to not think and be stuck in that rut of.
Yeah.
Because my mum had to go work.
Yeah.
She couldn't continue to work from home around my, like, my man, around ours.
Yeah.
My sister had to go back to work. Like, you can't. Yeah. Then you feel guilty.
Yeah.
Because you're having to rely on other people.
Yeah.
And at one point when I was going around my sisters at the beginning, I felt guilty on my nephews.
Yeah.
I would never, ever cry in front of the boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just thought, I cannot. I don't want that ever affecting asking questions. And, you know, like, it's good that they can understand what's happening. And I mean, my sister just says, oh, she's a bit sad today or whatever.
Yeah.
But because of the pressure and the guilt of them seeing me cry asking why, then that was then extra, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It just builds gradually. And I think that's the thing, that when your mental health is suffering, you like you say, you put pressure on yourself, but then every little bit of that, and it is tiny little things, but they're massive things.
Huge.
To you. And I think when you're in a bad headspace mentally, something that is really trivial and small when you're in a good place and you wouldn't even bat an eyelid about, it feels like the end of the world when that happens, when you're not in a good place.
Yeah, so I think around that time with me like trying to be, everything being perfect, it was Aurora's first birthday.
Yeah.
And it was her first birthday party. I'd knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I'd planned the hall. I'd planned the soft play that was coming. I knew what I wanted to put in the hall and everything else. But I couldn't deliver it.
Yeah.
Because I just kept... I was in a fog. It is a fog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just can't see straight, it feels like. It was horrible. Yeah. Really, really horrible. And so, God, my family took over and completely...
Yeah.
Did what they always do.
Yeah. Get it done. Girls. I was going to say, get it done.
Get it done. God, such amazing sisters. And my mum. Incredible. And also Dan's family as well. Yeah. So when Dan's family came down,
yeah,
I messaged them and I said, look, I just want to let you know that this is what's happened or happening at the minute. And they were brilliant. Like, Dan's family are amazing.
Yeah.
Like, really, really great.
Yeah.
And they took over.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I'll do this. I'll do that. The girls were doing this. Yeah. Janet was doing that.
Yeah.
They do that anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But because they knew that I was struggling, it was...
Yeah.
Right, let's sort this out and do it. Yeah. She had an amazing birthday party.
Oh, she did. It was incredible. Phenomenal.
Absolutely incredible. And I mean, but that day will always weigh heavy on me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't wait for it to be over.
Yeah.
And that was my daughter's first birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still gets me now. Because I just think I've been robbed of that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think you've really hit a nail on the head there. It's the feeling like you have been robbed of precious time and precious memories. I don't remember a huge portion of Rosie's first year because I was in that fog for maybe 9 months, 10 months. And I don't remember.
Mm.
And it's making me emotional. Like that. it's really hard.
This is going well.
Yeah. it's really hard to admit that.
Mm.
Really hard to admit that.
Yeah, no, it is.
Because there are just certain parts of it that I just don't...
No.
I don't remember. And the bits that I do remember, I think it's the knock-on effect of I only remember it because there's a video of it.
Yeah.
I don't actually remember being present in that moment.
Yeah.
I just... Thank God for iPhones because, you know, we can capture just about everything, in a second.
Live photos now as well.
I don't remember it. And no, I think that's one of the hardest parts about any sort of mental health, but particularly anything that's postnatal, because that time is so precious and it is heartbreaking when it's been tarnished by that.
Yeah. It's so hard because... Then you put extra pressure on yourself and you put yourself down because and you get angry at yourself. Just think, why have you let this happen?
Yeah.
So that, like, and you blame yourself.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not you.
No.
Absolutely not you. Yeah. It's just me. I'm going to say I'm lucky, I think, that I've never troubled with it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a situational...
Yeah.
thing that happened.
Yeah.
I had some bad cells removed from my cervix, and that was all happening as well at the same time, which I all then at the same time said to myself that I'm gonna die of cancer, and my daughter's 6 months old and I'm gonna die.
Yeah, yeah.
So then that.
Yeah.
So I think For me, I feel lucky that, not, it's terrible, isn't it, when you feel like that, but lucky that it was just a situational matter.
Yeah.
And that time
has passed.
It's passed and it's gone.
You've
and
come out the other side.
I've come out and I've touched wood and I've been fine.
Yeah.
Ever since, it was just, I think, stress.
Yeah.
There was a hell of a lot going on.
Yeah.
Physically, mentally, everything.
Yeah. But I think one of the things that I always say is, it is almost, I do count myself lucky that I had that breakdown and that I went through it, because not only does I think it then make you more aware of the world and of other people suffering, mm-hmm. and you can be kinder to them, it also really gives you new perspective on life and what's important and what isn't, definitely. And what you're going to invest your time into. And I think as well, it then makes you more conscious of your mental health. So you know if you're having a particularly stressful time, if lots is going on and you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, you're able to really quickly recognise that and think, right, stop now.
Yeah.
I need a break. I need to deal with this, because if I don't, it's going to creep back and back and back and back, and you're going to get into a hole that you can't get out of. And I actually think that's quite a blessing to be
absolutely.
That aware and that conscious of your mental health, that you're permanently almost checking in with it and keeping track of
yourself.
It. I think that's a really important skill and quality to have.
I feel lucky because I've been able to get that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I've had to go through that to be able to see that.
Yeah.
Like going back to work after all of that happening and thinking to myself, right, I want to be the lead in mental health.
Yeah.
Where I work.
Yeah.
Nobody does this here.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about mental health at work.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
I want to be that person that plants the seed here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that everyone knows. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely anybody. Yeah. Like, and people go through it like and suffer and you don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, and that for me, I was just like, well, I feel that I can, I don't think nobody will ever understand mental health.
No.
Unless they've gone through mental health.
Completely agree. Yeah, completely
no
agree.
No one's ever going to know that.
No.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah.
Because the people that haven't been through it don't understand.
No.
They don't get it.
No.
I'm fine now. Yeah. But if I said I had a breakdown last year, oh God, she's mental.
Yes. Yeah.
She's a nutter.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a nutter.
No.
I went for a really bad stage at the beginning of the year because there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make me a nutter.
No, exactly.
And that's what is wrong.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
That's what is challenging at the time, like now.
Yes.
You can talk about mental health to you go blue in the face.
Yeah.
But unless you've gone through it, you'll never understand it.
No, definitely. And I think it's only people who have been through it and do understand it that are then able to pave the way for change. Like, it's something that, again, I'm really passionate about, and I would love to see there be changes within my workplace. I'd love to see, you know, be able to have that openness, you know, to message your boss and say, look, I need to take today as a mental health day. Like, I'm really struggling. If I don't do this, I'm worried it will progress. And have that just replied, not a problem, I'll check in with you when you're ready. Or
but then not for them not to judge you on that.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
If you sit there and say, I just need a day.
Yeah.
I want to work from home for the day.
Yeah.
I just need to get myself together again. I'll be fine tomorrow.
Yeah.
I just need that one day for myself.
Yeah.
And for them not to think that you're an absolute nutcase who needs to be locked up in a mental home.
Yes. Yeah.
Because
that's it, yeah.
That's where we're at now.
I think you're right. I think people that haven't been through it perceive mental health as the extreme, like sections, straitjackets, kind of the TV dramatisation of it all.
But even when I started feeling, when I had the panic attack, the next day I went to the doctor because I was like, I don't have a clue what's going on, really.
Yeah.
But this is my mental health. Mm. And I knew it.
Yeah.
So I went, right now, I'm going to go to the doctor straight away. I went to the doctor, I said, this is what's happening. And then they said, hey, do this. But, like, even then, you don't sort of realise what's happening.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you sort of, like, judge yourself a bit. You're saying other people not to judge you, but you judge yourself. And I think, I'm going to be a nutter.
Yeah.
If I don't sort this out, I'm going to be a nutter. I'll end up killing myself, jumping off a bridge. Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to get a grasp of it.
That's why I was so... I had, like, the NHS therapy 12 weeks later. Joking. But 12 weeks, she was brilliant. Yeah, like, 12 weeks later. And she said, I can't believe what you've done for yourself.
Yeah.
And how far you've actually come.
Yeah.
Because I think mine was situational.
Yeah.
And I managed to just work really bloody hard to get out of it with a lot of support from my family.
Yeah.
And Dan, of course. It was a quick one for me.
Yeah.
I just can't even imagine how it is for other people that suffer with it day on and day out.
And just
my heart breaks for them in a way. Do you know what I mean?
And it takes that long for them to seek that help, so it then takes that much longer to then get the help, because, you know, there is such an issue with underfunding and waiting lists and all that sort of thing. And again, there is still this, like I say, I feel like we have made huge waves and the taboo is breaking. But you say about judging yourself. When I was offered medication, I turned it down because I was like, no, I don't need medicating for this.
Oh my God.
I just need...
different to me. I was like, yeah, I'll have whatever you want to give me.
I was really, because I was like, I don't know if that's because it then confirmed that I had a problem, or if it was the stigma of the fact that, oh, what are those pills for? Oh, they're actually for my mental health. They're like mood adjusters or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just hated the idea of that. And
to be fair though, so when I wasn't given antidepressants or anything like that. I was given like beat blockers or whatever they are. And after a week of taking them, or I think it was like 3 days or something, like 5 days, I stopped taking them because I kept saying to myself they were making me worse.
Yeah.
But like the fogginess.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. They weren't making me worse. Yeah. I didn't need them. And I didn't. Once I'd stopped, I didn't take them anymore.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, mine was quick, and I'm very lucky that it was quick. But you say to yourself, no, I don't need these. But for some people, they do need them.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
And that was purely on me. And that's
your mental health, though.
Because that's my
mental health. Because
I sit with friends and they're like, oh, the doctor's... And I'm like, take them. Yeah. Right? Like, don't worry. Like, if it's going to help you, take it. Go for it. But when that was me, I was like, no, I can't take them. I don't. That's not for me. I don't want...
Just do my breathing exercises.
Yeah. But I did need that extra help. Yeah. I mean, I didn't end up taking them. And luckily for me, it was the coming off the hormonal contraception that made a huge difference. Like, my God, you just forget what putting hormones into your body can actually do to you, mess up your natural chemistry. But we still judge ourselves a lot. I'd never actually thought about that, about putting that judgment on ourselves.
God, which all the time.
It's really, really bad. But let's, like you say, it was situational. It was brilliant what you did to get yourself out of it. But you were back at work literally weeks, and then the pandemic hit. And
so then I was back working from home for about a month, I think it was, and then it might have even been that, a couple of weeks, and then I was furloughed, and then the beginning of September I was told that my role was going to be up for redundancy, and I knew I was going to be made redundant, but I dragged it out as long as I could so that I could get another month's pay out of it. And then, so I was made redundant. My last day was on the 30th of September. And I literally signed a contract today to start another job on Monday.
Which is just so phenomenal. And kudos to you, because you are clearly an asset to any company. The fact that in the middle of a pandemic, less than a month after being made redundant, you're starting a new job. And I think that is fucking extraordinary in itself.
Yeah, it's true.
So well done to you.
Pat on the back for that one.
Oh, absolutely. I do quickly just want to touch on the whole furlough thing, though, because when this scheme was announced and I kind of got my head around it, I was like, why can't I be made furlough? Because, and I remember you saying it had happened to you, and I was like, mate, you're fucking laughing. Like, you're getting, and you got 100%, didn't you? Mm-hmm. So your employer topped it up. I was like, you're on full money. You ain't got to worry about working. You can literally just enjoy your time with your baby. And I was so jealous because I was pulling my hair out, trying to work, trying to homeschool, trying to stop Rose doing whatever Rose does, you know, without Cameron being here. And I was just like, oh my God. And at one point I did ask to be furloughed because it all got too much. But at the same time, you'd kind of let on a little bit, and I was talking to other people within my profession, like marketing people who had been made furlough, and I really underestimated what that did for people's mental health, like that feeling of not being essential to business, not really being needed, and has that just really devalued my skills? Mm-hmm. Because for in my industry, a lot of marketers were put on furlough, and you kind of think, well, is my job not important then? Is my skills not important? And like I say, I kind of went from being really jealous of these people to realising they were sat there questioning their skill set, their self-worth. Is it just a stepping stone to redundancy? Am I, so when I think when you've got that looming over your head and you think redundancy could be coming, what that does to your mental health is really stressful.
I think my situation's a bit different because of stuff to do with work. But when we first heard about this furlough scheme, I said to myself, right, these are the people that are going to get furloughed, for like thinking from a senior point of view. And then I was told that I was being furloughed, which it's difficult. So I knew I was being furloughed, and now because I've been made redundant, I believe that they furlough the people that they are gonna, if they need to make redundancies, they're gonna get rid of.
Right, okay.
That's how I see it.
Yeah.
Because of the situation that I've been in.
Yeah.
Without Sanji.
Of course, yeah.
So,
and that will probably vary from sector to sector.
Yeah, of course.
And different businesses.
Yeah, definitely. But my viewing on it is I was made redundant. I was put on furlough to then eventually be made redundant.
Yeah.
And they were just dragging it out. Yeah. I don't know why they dragged it out.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But being the nice employer, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it did make you feel shit, to be honest. It was like, well, why have they picked me?
Yeah.
And not that person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
And then redundancy, why me?
Yeah.
Now I know why.
Yeah.
But why me?
Yeah.
So it is very difficult, and I do think, I mean, COVID has fucked everyone over, to be honest.
Oh God, yeah.
It's affected everyone.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world just needs to carry on, to be fair, but
yeah.
Look, I'm not a scientist, am I? So,
yeah.
Or a medic. Yeah. I should put that out there. But yeah, no, it does affect every. I think actually now the more it's going on. Now is the time where you're going to start seeing people really struggling with their mental health.
Definitely. And
big time. Even people that have been coming off a furlough, going back into work.
Yeah.
They've had all that time off.
Yeah. That adjustment period, the going
adjustment,
back.
Yeah. And also the people that are working from home, that struggle working from home.
Yeah.
So like Dan struggles to work from home.
Yeah.
Mainly because we've got a creature that runs around climbing and everything she sees.
Yeah.
And knocking on doors. But like, he hates working from home.
Yeah.
He's one of these guys that wants to be in the office.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, I think everybody needs that.
Oh, definitely.
We can't just keep working from home.
No, yeah.
The world's never going to... No. You just can't.
No,
it's
just
never going to happen. Office space needs to be there. I'm just going to keep saying that because my job depends on that. So. All you bastards that are listening, and if you can go back into the office, that'd be great. But no, like, everybody is affected by this.
Yeah, of course.
Mental health-wise.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes.
There's not one person on this planet that can't tell me that they've not been affected by it.
I completely agree.
Definitely.
And it's really interesting because I saw a really interesting post on LinkedIn a few weeks back, and it really changed my... she's now got, you know, where they get that little spot on their leg starts going on its own. That's what she's doing, so apologies. Maybe I will do some editing for
edit
this episode.
This one. Edit this one.
So there was this really interesting article on LinkedIn, and it's something that I'd not really thought about before. And it said, health before wealth. Or is that the case? And it went on to explain that. And I think when we say that phrase, everyone's like, yeah, obviously health before wealth. But I think people think of health as physical and they think of wealth mm-hmm. as millions.
Yeah.
And actually, when you flip that and you think of the impact on someone's mental health and mental well-being when they then lose their average earning 25 grand a year job and the impact that then has on them... That's absolutely colossal. And we're kind of at, I think, and again, I'm not an expert, and I'm not a political person, and I'm not a scientist.
Disclaimer.
You know, this is just my opinion. There's no fact in this. Everyone's got a choice. Think what you like. But we're kind of at this pivotal point now where we have to look at what is more dangerous. The virus, which... unfortunately, you know, is worse for some than others. Is the virus as detrimental as what the knock-on effect would be? And the knock-on effect is going to be a huge recession. It's going to mean mass unemployment. It's going to mean families who don't have jobs, who are struggling to keep their houses, who are struggling to put food on the table. And actually, when you think of health versus wealth in that way, actually... the knock-on effect from this and people, you know, we've already got far too many people in this country living in poverty. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how much worse that is going to be when there's mass unemployment and all of that sort of stuff? So it kind of, again, personally for me, my opinion, we kind of need to be trying to keep the economy going as much as we can.
That's why they're not shutting the pubs and the clubs.
And that's the thing. And I do get it. And it really frustrates me with... Do you know what? We could get down a political rabbit hole. So maybe I'll just cut the conversation there. But
it's hard work.
I get that it doesn't make sense at the minute. The world feels like it's turned upside down and inside out. And it really has. And it has affected everybody. And I think one thing we can make a broad sweeping statement to say, the majority, if not all, of the population have suffered mentally in some way because of this pandemic.
Yeah.
Whether that is as small as just constantly being worried about your elderly nan catching it, mm-hmm. or whether that's because your job's at risk, your job's gone, whether you're
vulnerable.
I mean,
vulnerable. There's going to be a handful of people that just don't give a shit, and I value them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd love to have that kind of attitude.
I wish I was that person.
Yeah.
That would make my life a lot easier.
Oh, 100%. But I think, everybody's got their own anxieties about it and whatnot. But
everyone needs to just take care of their mental health. It's so important.
Yeah.
So incredibly important.
Yeah.
Self-care. Spend time with the people that you love and that you care about.
Yeah.
That gets you through. And talking about it.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's not just a social media campaign. It's not just a hashtag self-care. You've got to be practicing it. You've got to be talking.
Just do it.
And if you're someone who is just thinking, oh, that person's been a bit quiet today, just check in on them.
Yeah.
Just see. It's really funny. I had... Charlotte texts me about 2 weeks ago, and I'd literally just got in from work, and she said, are you okay, babes? And I was like, yeah, why'd you ask? And she was like, I've just got this feeling like you've been a bit quiet in the group today. And I was like, Char, I've literally had the worst day ever. Like, it's all kicked off. I've got major problems going on. But she
and the fact
that I then had that rant to her and spoke to her about it.
Oh, it makes you feel so much better.
Just problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah,
that's what my nan says, and I think That is so important to remember.
It's the pressure of it building up, building up, building up, building up.
Don't let it happen. Yeah.
And if you don't talk about it,
yeah,
you've got nowhere to go. Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It implodes back inside you, and then
it's horrible. Eats away at you. It's nasty.
Yeah. So that is where we will end and just say, look after your noggin, people.
Yeah,
make sure you're checking in with yourself, you're checking in with your friends. Make sure you're
looking
after
yourself. Do loads of boozy bingo.
Yes.
Mate, I keep saying we're doing boozy
bingo. We're doing it on Saturday. We're setting it on Saturday. We're doing it on Saturday.
Do loads of Zoom calls. Just keep on top of it.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
Yeah, definitely.
We got this.
We've got, I mean, imagine a pandemic without the technology that we've got. At least we can still talk to people. We can still virtually see people. Like, that's kind of, I think, what's kept most people going through this is just the FaceTimes and the interaction and stuff. But let's wrap up with the final question. Who in your life is your No Ordinary Gal that you'd like to shout out?
It's got to be my mum and my sisters.
Yeah. I was going to say, you've got a proper...
freaking incredible, man.
You've got your own girl gang within your immediate family. Yeah. Like, you're one of four sisters.
It's incredible, actually.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky to have that. My mum is amazing. And, when I look at my sisters don't realise how great they are.
Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah.
My sister, Kaylee, brings up the three boys, and I look at her every day and think... how do you do that, man?
Yeah.
You are such an incredible, incredible woman.
Yeah.
You don't realise how incredible you are.
Yeah.
And Kirsty and Carly. Carly's just, again, she's one of these, she's got a more mature head on her.
Yeah.
She always has, but she's had three older sisters, that's why.
Yeah.
But she's incredible. They all are. They're just, you're listening to this, girls, so I know you are.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
Right, you all are a drink now, girls.
And also, I know this is about women, but my dad.
Yeah.
I've got to shout out to my dad.
BJ!
BJ!
Yeah, Brian
BJ.
Jarvis. Always been a top lad.
He's my hero, mate.
Yeah.
He is I know this is about women, but he is just incredible.
Yeah.
He's so caring, he's so lovely. We make a joke because my mum always says, oh, if we've got three daddy's girls, what about me? What about me? Well, she's got a granddaughter now and she's got a nephew.
Grandsons.
But yeah, no, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely, mate. Oh.
He is. He's top lad. He's always been so, welcoming and caring to all of us as well for all the years.
Yeah, he's just incredible. He's an incredible, incredible man.
Yeah, he is.
He's so, such a nice... You don't ever really meet nice... really lovely man. He's just such a nice man.
Yeah, he is.
I love you, Dad.
Yeah, oh, bless. I
need more wine.
That.
Can we sign off?
Right, so on that note, we will leave it. But, Kim, thank you so much for coming out of your comfort zone and doing this. I hope you've enjoyed your little therapy session.
I'll
send you an invoice in the post.
Oh, please don't. Actually, I was just about to say, I've been married.
You've just landed yourself a new job. You can't be playing the redundancy card anymore, girl. Sorry.
Thank you so much.
And I think everybody will agree that after everything you've been through, you're absolutely no ordinary gal. If you're enjoying No Ordinary Gal, why not leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening from? It's a great way to let other ordinary girls know about the show too. And be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.